Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, partnering with donors from all walks of life to improve Southeastern Virginia through grants, scholarships, and leadership initiatives. Learn more at HamptonRoadsCF.org.
Hello, everyone. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. July is National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month, a time for all, but particularly those in BIPOC communities, to take stock of our mental health, both individually and collectively. On today's Another View, the work of the National Alliance on Mental Health, or NAMI, Coastal Virginia. Board President Max Willey and Dr. Erica Brown Meredith will share how they are making a difference one person at a time. Breaking the stigma of mental health. That's next on Another View, right after this national, regional, and local news from NPR and WHRO News.
Discussing today's topics from an African-American perspective, this is Another View.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Another View. I'm Barbara Ham Lee. Before we get started with our impactful conversation that we're going to have with you today, let me tell you about something that is happening. And, you know, we here at Another View are so proud of this. The Symphonic Sing-Along, which are free summer concerts that are happening by the Virginia Symphony Orchestra. Now, there's one scheduled for tonight, but it has been postponed because of weather. So it will be happening next Thursday, the 30th of July. And then there's Symphony Under the Stars this coming Sunday, July 26th at 8:30 p.m. at Town Point Park. And one of the things that caught our eye is that Nyla Norman, who, if you caught our Juneteenth show, you were exposed to, you got a first airing of the Juneteenth song, and Nyla was the soloist. And there was someone in the audience from Virginia Symphony Orchestra who tapped her to join them for the sing-along. So she will be performing, and we are so excited about this. So she'll be a vocalist. Helen Martell is a conductor. Robert Schaup is a vocalist. And it's a beautiful opportunity to come hear some symphonic music, hang out under the stars, bring your picnic basket, have a good time. So make sure you check that out. And congratulations, Nyla. We are talking today about minority mental health. And I want to tell you about an event that is happening on Saturday, this coming Saturday, July the 25th. Now, there's several events going on, but this one is From Wounds to Words, Creating Space to Listen, Speak, and Restore One Another. This one is happening from 10:30 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon at Living Destiny Church on East Little Creek Road in Norfolk. It is being put on by Tidewater African Cultural Alliance and in conjunction with the Hampton Roads Community Foundation. And they will have mental health experts speaking, and they are talking about the youth, the work of mental health, particularly in the African-American community. So this partnership centers African and diaspora experiences, highlighting tools for emotional well-being, resilience, and connection. And then there's also the event that we're going to be talking about today on the show, which is Breaking the Silence, Suicide Prevention and Community Healing. It also is this Saturday, July the 25th, from 10 a.m. until noon at the Murray Center. That's on East Brambleton Avenue in Norfolk. And this is in conjunction with Norfolk State University, NAMI, Coastal Virginia, and First Baptist Church, Butte Street. So lots of things happening in our community, particularly in the mental health space. And we want you to come out and take advantage of this information. So as I said, July is designated National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. There are lots of activities going on in Hampton Roads to bring attention to the mental health challenges faced by people of color. One organization in the trenches and doing the work to help people who are struggling is the National Alliance on Mental Health, or NAMI, Coastal Virginia, which is our local chapter here on the South Side. They are having an event this weekend. We're going to tell you more about that in just a minute. But please welcome to Another View, educator, licensed clinical social work professional, mental health advocate, researcher, and community leader, Dr. Erica Brown Meredith. She is an assistant professor in the Ethelyn R. Strong School of Social Work at Norfolk State University, serves on the board of directors for NAMI Coastal Virginia, chairs its Minority Mental Health Committee, and is co-owner of Rooted Ascent Wellness LLC. And when she's not doing that, I guess she gets some sleep, huh?
Yes, definitely.
Welcome. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Max Willey. Got it right, Max. Board President and Advocacy Chair of NAMI Coastal Virginia. He teaches and facilitates several NAMI signature educational programs, including Family to Family, Family Support Group, and Advocacy Smart Training. Max is a Navy veteran and licensed minister with the Mount Global Fellowship of Churches and is working on his Master of Divinity degree with a concentration in chaplaincy at Regent University. Hi, Max.
Hey, good morning.
It's good to see you. And if you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, please contact the National Mental Health Hotline by calling or texting 988. You can also chat online at 988lifeline.org. Wow, a lot going on this month, and clearly mental health is a major concern within the African-American community. So, Erica, let me start with you. What makes it different, or why do we need to call it out, particularly for people of color?
Well, a couple of reasons. People of color do not actually have access to care. So it could be in terms of just like a food desert. We have a desert in terms of facilities that are culturally competent that can provide services that are relevant to people that are Black and brown. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, also it could be a cost factor. A lot of folks do not have insurance, and or if they do have insurance, then it's transportation is a barrier also in terms of being able to have transportation to get the services as well. The other thing to think about too in terms of these services is the stigma in our community. And so, you know, they say I'm cray cray. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, she's cray cray or something's wrong with her or that uncle or that auntie, you know, when you go to family reunions or family functions, don't get too close
don't
to them, right?
Or stay away. Don't let them, if you see the Madea movie, they're up in the room with the door closed.
Right. And they're like, just give them a plate.
Yes.
And so needless to say, we don't start these conversations in our community. And so, therefore, there's a stigma around it or this mystical creature that's lurking in the corner somewhere. So don't get too close to them because, you know, you might get it as well. And so it's relatively important that we really start to talk about mental health and how that shows up in all of us. Research shows that every one person experiences a mental health type of diagnosis to some degree that they need some form of treatment. So what am I saying? Mild depression, you know, anxiety. You know, I'm going through menopause right now, premenopausal, and I went to the doctor. And I was like, I think I'm getting dementia. I get all these degrees. My dad's like, you're an educated fool. I was like, I think I'm getting dementia. Something's wrong with me. And she's like, again, a Black doctor, African-American doctor. She says, no, ma'am, you're going through menopause. You're premenopausal. Black women and women of color also go through menopause early. Some of the same symptoms are also related to in terms of mental health as in terms of the sleeping problems, the lack of memory, the fluctuation of mood. And so all of these things play into effect. So we have to think about mental health in the Black community the same way we think about diabetes, which we affected by diabetes as well. And so it is a physical condition that's also medically treated. But you have to use a holistic approach. It can't be, I just take the medication and that's it. It's the social interaction. It's the therapeutic approach, right? It's the immersing in community. It's like finding in terms of what is your divine purpose? Like what does God have for you or intended for you in this life? And moving toward that to have some sense of fulfillment.
So when we say mental health, because we use the term all the time, mm-hmm. but are we talking, some people may think we're talking about the extremes, you know, the schizophrenia mm-hmm. and, you know, things of that type of diagnosis. Some people think it's just the mild depression. I mean, what is it? What does it actually mean, Max?
It's having, you know, anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, that feeling of isolation. Mm-hmm. Some of those things that are mild that most everyone experience at some point in life, even if you're not fully diagnosed. You know, we all can get a little sad some days, a little pick-me-up. We may be going through grief, but it's those conditions where now you require some intervention from medical professionals to help you overcome some of those challenges. And just like Dr. Meredith said, you need the prayer, you need the medication, and you need the therapy, all mm-hmm. working together in unison to help you overcome some of those issues.
Some of the things that are happening. So now you guys are having this big event this weekend. First of all, yes. Tell me about what people should expect there. And then after that, I want to talk about exactly what is NAMI. Okay.
Sure. Okay. So let me just tell you about the event. I'm so excited, super excited about it. So my pastor, Jerry Holmes. Sorry, he's not a doctor as of yet, but I'm acclaiming that for him in the victory in the name of the Spirit. Amen. But it's interesting because I just reaffiliated myself back with First Baptist. And he says, this is an area of concern in our community, especially in inner city Norfolk, right? There are folks here that are suffering that have a need. And so he's been really key on looking at the person in its totality. Mm-hmm. So we have like a homeless ministry there. We have a shower ministry. We have a food ministry. And so we're really looking at the basic needs of folks, but mental health is also a basic need. You know, mm-hmm. emotional, psychological, social, and spiritual well-being make up that question, would you ask, like, what is really mental health? Mm-hmm. And so needless to say, this event is designed just to do that. We have over 23 vendors who will be there that are community wow. resources. I mean, down to mental health specialists, down to folks who are licensed clinical therapists, down to psychiatrists, to attorneys. So we're looking at mental health in its totality. Organizations too, the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And so all of these services are gonna be there. I've designed a navigator, like a passport. Because a lot of times it's how do I start the conversation, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so this passport navigator that I've designed, you get that at the time that you register. And it says, how do I start the conversation with someone at any one of these tables? Mm-hmm. And then what are the things that I need to think about? And then how do I also get their contact information and also reach out to them? So all that is accessible to break the barriers of being able to start dialogue and engage in the conversation. So we will have vendors there that will be there. We have door prizes. We have gift cards, like $100 gift cards, $50 gift cards. We have actually one of the agencies here locally who's all about supporting folks in terms of having sustainable jobs. And so we have a nursing care agency that's going to be there that teaches how do you go about securing a job in the healthcare industry. And so we have that agency that'll be there also providing a free class that's mm-hmm. at the $400 value. So just a variety of different things. And so we will start the conversation with a panel discussion of experts in the field itself. From there, we will then move into like a small circles where there'll be youth, there'll be professionals, and also members of the community who actually deal with mental health directly. And then we'll also have a parent group also. And so it's more like a fireside chat.
Wow. Okay.
So you just start the conversation, you give them a little of information, you talk about the historical perspective, and the kind of the conversation just leads itself in different directions.
And everybody, this is open to everyone. Is there a cost?
There is no cost associated. It's open to everyone. And we're hoping that folks will just flood it. We'll have snacks there for you as well and drinks as well.
Do you need to register ahead of time?
You don't need to register. We just need to show up.
Okay. And that is at First Baptist Butte Street.
That's First correct? Baptist Butte Street.
Okay. All right. So
at
10 o'clock from 10 until noon.
Exactly.
That's when you all will be there. Max, tell us about NAMI. What exactly is it and what do you guys do?
Great. So first, this is part of our NAMI quarterly community event.
Yes.
We did a lot of work in May for the National Mental Health Awareness Month. So July, we decided to partner with the church and with Norfolk State to have a bigger event in the city of Norfolk, my hometown, at that core area where there's so many services needed. NAMI is the largest grassroots organization in the United States that focuses on supporting those with mental health conditions and their family members. There are over 600 affiliates across the United States, including Puerto Rico. In Virginia, there are 13 affiliates. NAMI Coastal, there used to be separate NAMI affiliates throughout our cities, Norfolk, Chesapeake, Virginia Beach. So about 2018 or so, we decided to dissolve that and have a collected NAMI Coastal Virginia. And now we're serving Norfolk, Portsmouth, Chesapeake, Virginia Beach, and the Eastern Shore. During COVID, if someone needed some help, we would reach out and provide that support as well. We support, we educate, and we advocate. Every year, we go up to the General Assembly to advocate for laws and bills for parity, for folks with mental health, housing, and then also community services, so people have places in the community to go to. So if they are first getting discharged from a psychiatric hospital or from a jail, we need a step-down way to make sure that they're getting their medication, follow-up appointments, transportation, so that they're not returning back to the jail. We did a tour of the Virginia Beach Jail, and we found that is one of the largest mental health hospitals there are.
Wow, you know, because they don't know where else to send them.
Right, exactly.
When people have an episode.
Yeah. So we support the adult, youth. We're kicking off a military mental health campaign also, because this is the largest military area around here. And there are services through the military and with the Department of Veteran Affairs. But we also want to make sure that we're part of that solution with them as well. And we do a lot of fundraising and awareness of events. We have a annual Mental Health Hero Ball where we acknowledge the mental health professionals to come in. That's going to be next year, April 2027. And then we have our NAMI Walks, which is another big fundraiser, which is coming up in October at the beach, where you just walk for a cause. You register, you get a team. It allows us to raise funds so we can continue to provide free services, free for everyone who's needing that help.
And most of the people who work with NAMI are volunteers. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But everyone who works with NAMI has a shared, an actual experience with mental health?
Yes, mostly. And it's the best way to have folks who are part of those volunteers, and including our paid staff. We have three paid staff members who have a story. And if you are a volunteer, you know, obviously either you have lived experience or a loved one. Now, for our facilitators, our classes, our public classes that we offer, you have to, that is a prerequisite to have either a lived experience or a family member.
Why is that so important?
Because you are now relatable to some of the issues and some of the problems and some of the solutions in order to get your loved one the help they need. For example, I'm a facilitator for three classes, like you mentioned, family support group, which is like a community event where you just have folks come in and talk. But our more formal one, family network course, where we get education, we understand what schizophrenia is, we understand how the brain is, and even though we have script, but our experience dealing with that with our loved one helps us more relatable to our family members that we're providing support and education to.
So really, it's kind of a two-part thing, if you will. I mean, someone finds out that they have a diagnosis, a mental health diagnosis or need mental health services, and then you all are the support around them in terms of living day to day. Is that a fair
absolutely
assessment?
Along with other affiliates that we do and other organizations, but we're there to provide that day to day support for them. You know, with some of our, like our connections group, our Say It Out Loud group, where we have folks with lived experience go out and tell others about their experiences, and it empowers them to become a person. Which a lot of time with mental health, you have a lot of self-conscious issues. You have, you know, you isolate yourself. We help open that door so people can feel comfortable talking about mental health, and those support family members to come say, hey, I need support as well. Where do I go? And we have places to vector them.
So let's talk about, first of all, back to the whole idea of understanding mental health and finding the right help. So Erica, I know that a lot, there aren't many, if you look at the population as a whole of psychiatrists, psychologists, licensed clinical social workers, others who can do the therapeutic work, there aren't many of color as you compare to the entire United States. But how do you find a therapist who is culturally competent, who can understand your issues and work with you?
Wow, that's a good question. I was talking to one of your colleagues earlier about that in regards to how do I go about accessing services, mm-hmm. and is it really important for me to find a good match? But a good match really can make the difference in terms of therapy, because therapy is designed in such a way that it produces the skills that you need so that you can be independent. And so therefore, you know, you go into it, like in my practice, I'm working on my licensure for therapy, for being a social worker, a licensed clinical social worker. Mm-hmm. And I go in with the very intentionality of what is it that you need in order for you to be able to function successfully without my support? How will I know that I've done my job and that you have reached your goals? When will you be able to be self-sufficient? Because if you think about it this way, there should be goals, and goals should lead you to an exit. No one should be in a therapeutic setting long-term. So everyone has mental health, and just like everyone has physical health, we need to think about in terms of mental health simply as emotional well-being, and how do I get those needs, attention, and also that care for a person. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you need to do is you need to think about what is their theoretical perspective. And in that, do they have a sense of using modalities in terms of treatment and also theoretical premises? Like, how do I go about practicing or providing you the service? Like, when I prepare for your session, mm-hmm. I'm looking at the totality of a person. And so you really have to use a holistic view for people of color using this model that's very ecologically nature, meaning that I'm looking at all spheres of influence that impact a person itself. Then you need to think about also in terms of, do you use a sense of spirituality? I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about spirituality, a sense of connection that you have with people. Mm-hmm. Like when I met you, and I was telling your other colleague, when I met you, I felt like a sense of kindred spirit, mm-hmm. like a sense of passion about this work and why we want to do it and why it's so important. Even you having this program today is a sense of avocation, and you can feel that and sense that. So being able to have that sense of connection also. Mm-hmm. Do people have a variety of different modalities? Like, can I do it virtually? Can I do it by phone? Can I do it in your office? What about the times? Is the times conducive for me? A lot of us work these various different hours. So are your hours only from 9 to 5? And if that is, then it's not culturally sensitive and it's not relevant to the population. So you need to think about the treatment modality. You need to think about in terms of the location. Like, is it accessible? Is it off a bus line? Is it something that I can drive to, right? You need to also think about in terms of their time frames that they practice, and you might be able to access those services also, and really thinking about their theoretical premise, like, what do I need?
So once you meet a therapist, so right. say you pick one, and once you meet them, mm-hmm. Are there certain questions that you should ask? And if you get that gut feeling that this is, I'm not sure, do you walk away? Do you try it and go through a session? What do you do in terms of making sure that you're picking the person who's right for you?
Okay.
And is it trial and error?
I guess it is to some degree trial and error, but I would hope that one would be very systematic in choosing a therapist, since it's so relatively important. The same way that you may choose a doctor mm-hmm. would be the same way that you go about choosing a therapist, right? Mm-hmm. And so I tell my clients at the onset of the first session that I'm not for everyone, and that's okay. This is your treatment, not my treatment. So you need to go in it with a very egocentric type of perspective, like, this is about me today and not about anybody, it's about me. Mm-hmm. And if that person is not for you, that's okay. But you need to ask them, like, what experience do they have with working with people of color? What is their approach? And that's, again, going back to their theoretical premise in terms of how they go about setting up their practice, coming mm-hmm. up with a plan for you, and then moving towards action. We know this, that if you treat a people of color and you don't have a sense of action, like something that you can treat or you can give me a remedy for at the first session, the client will not return.
Because that's what they walk into. So that leads me to my next question. And Max, I'm not leaving you out. I'm trying to get to a point though. If you are, what are the expectations that you as a patient should have about therapy? Because is it your job as therapist mm-hmm. to fix me as patient?
That's a good question.
Or is it, we can talk about some things, but you still got to do the work.
Mm-hmm. So I tell my clients that the work is not done until you leave. When you leave me, that's when the work's done. So essentially what you can think about therapy is I give you a roadmap. I give you also the information to define and describe what's going on with you so that I normalize your experiences. And then I send you out there and I say, okay, now you go and implement that. You're going to fall some and that's okay. You're going to have some gains and some setbacks, but then we come back, we talk, we kind of reconfigure it again, and then you go back out there again and you do the work. So the work is really done in the community, in the home, and those relationships that we have with our loved ones. And so that's the experiences that you really need to think about in terms of therapy, what an experience may look like.
So then, Max, let me take it to you. Mm-hmm. If the family around, the family says, okay, Barbara, you went to your session, you're dealing with that. What's their responsibility in terms of helping?
Absolutely. So you really need that whole family unit to be part of the solution. You have the therapy aspect and you have the medication management aspect that the psychiatrist provides. Hopefully they're in the same practice, but they may not be. Mm-hmm. But once that diagnosis is finally determined, now the work can be done. And it's best for the family to be completely in sync on one accord on the treatment of that family member. And that also includes going to the appointments with them, understanding what the treatment plan and the roadmap is, mm-hmm. so that everyone can be aligned to that. Based on, you know, my experience with a family member with a mental health condition, we did everything. We went all stop. We said, if this is how it's going to be, we're going to move forward to make sure that our loved one gets all the care they need and the medication that they need as well.
Can I say something?
Just 1 second. 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about minority mental health with Dr. Erica Brown Meredith, board member and chair of the Minority Mental Health Committee for NAMI Coastal Virginia, and Max Willie, board president and advocacy chair at NAMI Coastal Virginia. 757-440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Go ahead, Erica.
I just want to say this one quick thing, that I don't want there to be an understanding that you have to have a diagnosis to start services first. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I just want
to
make sure I emphasize that, because I don't want that to be a barrier. Just like when you say something's wrong with my arm and I'm not sure, and it's maybe the muscle or it might be the vessels, you go first and you go to ascertain what the problem is before you get a diagnosis and do treatment. You can still participate in any one of these services without having anything formal on a paper that says this is my DSM diagnosis. So please, if you're feeling like you're sad, and everyone experiences the emotion of sad, but if it's for a long period of time.
I'm glad you clarified that.
That's
because
good.
Because people say, well, yeah, I was sad yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'm not sad today. It's for a long period of time.
It's for a long period of time. It's the way to look at it is it impeding your ability to maintain your daily living factions?
Exactly.
So facets. So am I able to get up in the morning? Am I able to take care of my personal needs? Am I eating properly? Am I engaging with folks? Am I maintaining my employment? When it starts to impair in terms of some of those executive functionings, mm-hmm. that's when you know that services are definitely warranted.
Mm-hmm. Max, if a family member doesn't believe in it, doesn't believe in getting therapy, you know, just take your prayers, your diagnosis to God and you'll be all right. Mm-hmm. How do you bring them into, because I would imagine that would be even more traumatic or cause even more trauma for the person who actually is experiencing a mental health condition.
Yeah, we see that all the time in our classes. When the family members, for example, family to family class, even family support group, when the family members come in and said, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with them. They just need, you know, to go to work, or they need to go in the military, or something like that. But then I put myself in their shoes when I was first going through it. And then I bring them to current days. Like, listen, I was the same way you were several years ago. But none of that really worked. That strategy didn't work because I didn't understand what mental health conditions were and the diagnoses and all the other aspects of it. So it's our job at NAMI to help bridge the gap, mm-hmm. of that knowledge, of that you treat it like any health condition, diabetes, high cholesterol, treat it as a medical condition that's, that needs care. And once we get them on board with that and get them educated on some of the other things, then it's a little easier for them to embrace what we're trying to share with them.
So yeah, we know that faith is a huge component of, yes, of Black life, mm-hmm, you know. So Mac, I'll ask you, since you're in school now, but seriously, how do you square the work of mental health with faith in God?
It is absolute. Faith is a critical factor in the recovery and the alignment, knowing that there's a higher power out there for the healing, to give you that moral alignment and that spiritual support to give you help hourly, minute, daily, whatever it is, because you need that. I had mentioned that prayer is always an important factor. We have found, especially in the African American community, because we grew up in the church, you know, we have a connection with Big Mama, or, you know, your dad was a deacon or someone. We know what the, what's been taught, but we found that if you don't include faith as an element, then you're missing that connection that, that the Black community is really depending on.
Mm-hmm. I found a study that was done by the Minority Health Initiative with Health and Human Services, mm-hmm, with the government. And we were talking about this before the show started. But they did the survey about, and they were looking at Black people, Black men and women, mm-hmm, and kind of how they are experiencing mental health overall. But the thing that jumped out with me, they had a section on adolescence. And they said one of the questions was, students in grades 9 through 12 who seriously considered attempting suicide in the past 12 months. Now, of Black males, Black male population, 11.6% was the number. Out of the total population of everybody, it was 14.1%. For Black females, 27.7%. The total population of 27.1. What is going on, Erica, with our young girls in grades 9 through 12 that number is so high?
You know, the thing about it, when you think about it from a philosophical way and also thinking about it really in terms of where folks are developmentally, mm-hmm, that is a really important part of the developmental process in terms of that age range between 16 and 19 years of old. And Black adolescent girls are experiencing a concern increase in suicide thoughts and also suicide attempts. So I want to make a difference between the two, because there are thoughts of it and then there also are attempts of it. There used to be a point in time where males were the ones who were the ones that were committing suicide due to, in terms of their physical composition, and or they had means in order, mm-hmm, for them to move towards making the attempt something that was more tangible in nature. And so now we see that, yes, suicide is one of the leading causes among adolescents and also young adults. Mm-hmm. But research shows there's no one single cause. There are multiple stressors that kind of intersect, that impact the well-being of our young folks. The stigma around mental health itself, you know,
even for young people, because I thought that young people were more accepting that than certainly my generation in terms of mental health.
But be strong, you know, that thing of Black excellence, right? Because we'll clap and say, oh, Black excellence, you know, you're doing your thing. But Black excellence comes also with a cost, because you expect me then to achieve.
To always be excellent.
And when I'm not, then it impacts my sense of self-efficacy. Mm. And now what you're saying is you're an imposter. So then what we do is we then couple that with imposter syndrome, and here we are. You also, in terms of the social political environment that we're in right now, racism and discrimination also, in terms of this chronic stress that's associated with bias and also microaggressions. Mm-hmm. Our young people don't always have the terms for these things that are going on, but they're like, I'm experiencing something, I'm not sure what that is. And I would say this, even as a parent of young adults, we don't always do a good job too of educating our children, because now that our parents, their grandparents have gotten through all of these different phases in the 60s and 70s, you know, we think we've arrived, and then we don't give them the context historically in terms of what allowed you to get to the point that you are, so they don't have a point of reference. And then you have social media and the pressure of media. Mm-hmm. These cell phones right here in itself, research shows, are very problematic, and it impacts also our mental health. Because we see something that flashes on the screen for 5 seconds, and we're like, that's how my life should be.
Yeah, and then we're doing everything we can to go there when it may be totally, one, it may not even be true.
Exactly.
And then secondly, we're trying to strive for something that somebody else has.
And then you think about the other part of that also is that you don't have culturally responsive mental health care, even in the schools itself. So when I was a student, there were only 2 Black teachers. I used to be a school social worker, and the ratio of teachers of color to students is still very problematic. If I have a problem or concern as a young person, the first person I'm going to is my friend and then a teacher or someone that's a mentor or someone also that's a coach of mine. And mm-hmm. so part of the dilemmas also is that these young folks too don't always have these strong family relationships. We're always moving about. We don't have the same dynamics in terms of family. You get on the house at 6 o'clock when the lights come on and we having dinner and you eating what's on this plate and that's it. Or you go up dead hungry, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have these faith and spiritual communities where we're taking these kids in as a collective. And, you know, when I get off the bus, I'd get in trouble from the person at the end of the block
yes.
to the person at my house. And then when a family function came like 6 months later at the big family event.
They told on you again.
Boy, I tell you. So these positive like racial and cultural ideas about accountability, right? About early access to mental health care, to feeling connected and a sense of belonging in one's school and also one's community is relatively important. Like I moved my kids to what I could afford was a community that was predominantly white because I couldn't afford private school, right? But then that means they have to deal also with isolation. You know, there's not resources in my community also that speak to people of color. I'm not seeing folks that look like me that are in these professional spaces I'm trying to move. Mm-hmm. Folks aren't also mentoring my kids. I have to be very strategic about that. But in my strategicness, I'm trying to work, maintain a home, maintain a whole husband, you know, and kids and extended family network. So my bandwidth becomes like limited. Yeah.
And that's where the community is really needs to step up. And we don't see that now because we're living in different, you know,
times
and in different neighborhoods where when I grew up, everyone in the community knew each other.
Right.
So absent of that, now the church really has to step up and take on the role of educating the entire congregation. And it starts with the leadership. When the leadership says, hey, yes, we know that some of us have mental health conditions. I'm seeing a therapist. I've had some of our senior pastors that mentioned that, you know, to say, hey, it's okay to see them. I know it says in the Bible that you should pray for these things, but also God has also given folks the gifts of medication and therapy to help everyone else in the community.
And, you know, I want to ask you about that, Max, too, because there are a lot of people who will go to their pastor for counseling.
Yes.
But not all pastors are counselors.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
So I mean, you know, you also have to balance that.
You do. And that's where you really got to understand the relationship with your pastor, because the pastor, you know, he's trying to give the best spiritual advice as possible.
He or she.
That's exactly right. But you also need to know that maybe there are limitations from the pastor's knowledge that you have to now go to see a professional. And hopefully the pastor is strong enough to allow his member to say, hey, this is beyond my ability. Mm-hmm. Please go see a medical professional. Because you may go to your pastor and says, I'm having chest pain. Well, let me pray for you, but then let's go to the emergency room. So that is exactly what you want your spiritual leader to help do, to say, yes, we do believe that God can heal. We also know that God provides folks who can help the medication aspect.
So group therapy versus individual work versus community and all of that. I mean, is it based on the individual and what makes them most comfortable in terms of sharing or in terms of how they want to navigate their healing?
We'll kick off, and I'm going to pass it over to her. So for us, we provide group sessions. Mm-hmm. You know, family members come in and we kind of talk through about a hot potato issue. Well, your hot potato could be, you know, my loved one is getting ready to get released from jail and they have schizophrenia and I'm not sure what to do. So yeah, we try to help them navigate some of the services, some of the things that they can do in advance to get a plan in place. Maybe they don't come to your home. Maybe mm-hmm. they go to a temporary housing facility or mm-hmm. shelter until we can get that person stabilized in that new environment. So that's from our perspective, but I know from my own personal belief that and experience that I think individual therapy is very good. I also think family group therapy is also good. It's what I said earlier. You want the whole family to be aligned on the care of that loved one, and it's so critical.
Yeah.
So let me just say this, that there's not one approach to how does best to serve a person or a family member that has mental health. So we got to really think of it as, if I have a mental health diagnosis, then my family is essentially a part of that diagnosis, right? And so the right support then depends on the person's need. It depends on their history. Mm-hmm. It also depends on their culture and also their goal. What do I want out of this? So when you really think about individual therapy, you're thinking about someone who needs personalized attention, right, and treatment. Mm-hmm. So they may help with processes like trauma, anxiety, depression, grief, or even challenges that one may have in a relationship that show up in their own personal life. Individual therapy also provides a safe place because it's not a place where I have to put on a face, right?
Yeah.
For mm-hmm. other folks.
For other folks that are sitting in the room. Yeah.
So it becomes this confidential space that allowed you to build these coping skills as well. But group therapy helps because group can also be family therapy, like you alluded to also, Max. Mm-hmm. And to realize that a person is not alone, and that's half the battle, that you're not alone, that you have support here, that we get you, that we understand you. And you may not always understand, but at least you have the education that can at least start the conversation. You have the proper vernacular in order for you to address it. Not I'm cray cray, or you crazy, or you psychic. You know, being able to have the right terms, because that does matter. It helps reduce the shame and also the isolation. And it allows people to learn from one another and also some that have similar experiences. And so like Max alluded to, the NAMI groups that are there, they're designed just for that, peer-to-peer, or even those for family members who may be experiencing someone with mental health.
Yeah.
But one of the things I do want to go back to talk about this mental health is that we all experience some form of trauma, and our ability to be able to manage that trauma and over a period of time impacts the brain. Okay, so when you think about these diabetes or problems that one may have, that you may think that I'm taking you to the hospital, the ER, because of your heart, when you talk to the pastor, mm-hmm. you gotta think about this affects one's nervous system and the way that you respond. Okay. And so how I respond to stress then becomes a change that's in my brain. That change in my brain is because there's these fluids that are up there that are now decreased. And so you may need the medication, but you also need the other aspects in order to increase that. So we got to really think about this using a medical model. So if we can act in terms of thinking about the wisdom and stewardship of the pastor and how he goes about treating or referring someone mm-hmm. for assistance and help, you got to think about God, like you said, often answers us, but sometimes the answers to prayers are through the people mm-hmm. and the places in our lives, and yes. also through our lived experiences. Mm-hmm. So it's not always that pastor has the responsibility or duty for the treatment. It's sometimes they're the referring out, or they can be that conduit, because right. that's where we go.
And they can exactly. be the one to also reassure that, hey, it's okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
For you to go and for you to do
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yes.
This, though, and I want people to really understand this, because a lot of times we talk about people who've been incarcerated,
yeah.
people who are homeless, people who mm-hmm. are of lower socioeconomic means. This is not about socioeconomics.
No, not at all.
This is everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. There is no difference in a color, no difference in your economic status or education. It's a health condition. You know, that mm-hmm. it's that impacts everyone, you know, equally. You know.
But people yeah. different people have access in different ways depending on
so there is a difference there,
and that is a difference.
So yeah. education, we can look at it like this: education becomes a protective factor. Okay, so how many protective factors do you have will also impact the outcome of your mental health, also your access and how soon you get the services to decrease or to be able to treat the particular disorder, and or your ability to be able to manage independently on your own. So we need to think about education as a protective factor, just like we think about the church and faith.
How do you get someone, you observe them and you say, you know, maybe you need to talk to somebody. Maybe you need to think about going to therapy, and they are, nope, I'm fine. Is it your, as a friend, as a family member, whomever, responsibility to keep harping on it? Or do you just wait until they get ready? You know, how much push should you give someone if you think that they really need, that they could really benefit from therapy?
I will start that conversation when I was a supervisor in the federal government, when they were someone that you really knew that there was something not right with them. So, you know, I would take it upon myself and say, hey, you know, you seem just a little off today, and just give them some evidence of things that you've seen. You've been a little late the last couple of weeks, and is everything okay? And just try to start the conversation with them so they feel comfortable talking to you. If I go in there and just say, hey, you know, you're not doing your job, you're not doing this, I'll get shut down. But try to ease a conversation in with them and understand what some of the things that's been triggering them to have a difference in what, you know, their outward appearance looks like, what their mood looks like. And then see how you can help them get to the level of services that they need.
But, you know, the other thing is this, is that we a lot of times are not mindful of others that are in our spaces. We're so concentrated on ourselves, our family members. It's all about us. And so I think the first step is to notice, you know, because what we'll do is like, oh, she's got an attitude today. Something wrong with her. That's okay. But if something's wrong with her, she got an attitude this day after day. It's something ain't right there.
Something's not right.
Yeah.
So the first step is to notice. The second one is to listen.
Listen.
Before we go offering all these suggestions, is just to hear somebody. Because a lot of times people just want to know that they're heard. I just want you to affirm me. To say that I'm present, that you see me, right? And then the third is to connect them with support. You don't have to be an expert in order to connect folks with support. You just have to care enough to say, hey, I care about you and I'm worried. This is what I've noticed, right?
Yeah.
I've seen some changes in your mood, like you alluded to, or your personality. You know, you're no longer engaging like you were before. You know, we're not kiki and ha-ha anymore, right? Yeah.
And, you know, probably sometimes as you say those kinds of things, it really is reaffirming what they already know.
Exactly.
You know, in terms of, because sometimes people can think about those things themselves, but then they're just like, oh, it's just one of those days, you know, and you don't look at it from a mental health perspective.
Right. And it just could be just having a bad day, but it's when you see that now repeated pattern over a length of time. But like you said, start listening first without interrupting. Just see what they say and say what they tell you. And then eventually they may come around and start feeling more comfortable and sharing some things. Say, hey, Max, yeah, I'm going through a divorce right now. Or, you know, I have my child ran away. And those could be some reasons that are temporary, but now are having a longer term effect on the individual.
But you got to think about this. There's changes that you see
changes over
a period of time.
Yes.
That's also like you can count it. It's, you know, quantitative.
Yeah, we can quantitative. Exactly. You can look at it and see what's what.
And we may be using other means in order to address our mental health, like alcohol or drugs, right? Yep. Loss of interest in activities. That's something to think about, right? How it is that one may respond to an event.
Yeah.
Feelings of hopelessness, feeling trapped or feeling burdened, you know, that's also something to think about. Or someone giving away their possessions, something they really, really like they hold it dear to my heart.
Right. Yeah.
And they start giving that away, or they're saying, well, you know what, something happens to me, you can have this. These are things that you need to talk about. If someone says that they want to commit suicide or say they're thinking about it, you asking them questions is not going to say, I'm going to go do that right now, right? So don't be afraid to address it. Call it what it is. If it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, then it's a duck.
Yeah, she's right. If someone says, you know, I want to kill myself, or they don't be afraid to use those words with that individual and stay with them. You know, and then get
so
them
take them very seriously.
Take them
absolutely.
That's what they're
and
saying.
And if you don't know what to do, take them to the closest ER. Yes. I mean, literally, like walk them there.
Yeah.
I take students to the counseling center. I walk them there. Do not leave them. Walk them there. And so that's the thing that you can do, is just to reach out for help. If they don't need the help, then that's okay.
If you are someone you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, please contact the National Mental Health Hotline by calling or texting 988. And you can also chat online at 988lifeline.org. We only have a couple minutes left. What is a stereotype that you would say to the Black community in particular about mental health that you just wish would go away? What is something about this area in life that you want them to just
for
be
the
done?
Black male is that toughness, that ability that you don't want to be intimidated by someone else. So we have to allow us to break in so that we can get some help. We have the motto that iron sharpens iron, which is true. So if you're seeing someone who's not as sharp as they need to be, now step in to do that and put your pride aside to get them the help.
Okay,
there's so many.
Okay, take
okay.
it.
How about
you got
this
two,
one?
You got, let me see.
Black people
you got
are,
2.5 minutes.
2.5 minutes. Okay, how about this one? Black people are strong. You're a superwoman. You're a superhero. I'm in a session now with a client. He's black male. And we're going over this superhero. Like, when and how did you think you're the superhero? Okay. Strength is one of the greatest things in our culture. However, sometimes we confuse strength also with silence. Okay.
Yes.
The other one is just pray about it. If you just pray about it, get the Bible and put it on your child,
right.
then you know, you're going to be healed. Okay. Prayer is powerful.
It is.
Very powerful. But many of us, you need to use that. It's a foundation for a starter, right?
Yeah.
And so it allows you to say, okay, even when you go to seek that therapist, do you use prayer or spirituality as part of your theoretical modality, right? We can pray and go to therapy. We can also trust God. But while we're doing that, also we need to use our resources, right?
Yes.
What happens in this house
stays in this house.
Hallelujah.
Don't go telling our business about what's going on outside the door. Yes.
Oh, my God. That is too funny. So privacy has been something that a lot of our families have kind of indoctrinated us to believe. But when it comes to helping folks with depression or trauma or addiction or suicide thought, it can be very harmful.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, therapy is for white folks.
Oh, that's true.
That is a big one.
Yes, it is.
Community. Yeah. That's very true.
And mental health does not discriminate at all.
Yeah. Last 30 seconds, tell us again when and where for the conference this weekend.
Oh, please come. It's at First Baptist Church, the Murray Center. It's going to be from 10 until noon. Mental health matters. We ask that you please show up. Even if you're not sure why you're there, just come. Get information in the event that you might need it later. So please show up.
Okay. Dr. Erica Brown Meredith,
yes.
Max Willie, thank you so very much. And hopefully, I know that the event this weekend will be fantastic. Thanks for all you all are doing within
thank
our
you.
Community.
We're praying for great weather.
Absolutely. And that's the other piece. So audience, I do want you to know that we were honored today to have the interns from the Newport News Commissioner of the Revenue and the Newport News Treasurer's Office. And our interns are Daryl Lifesey, who is with Hampton University and the 5-year MBA program, Carlin Robertson, Winchville High School, London McNair, Warwick High School, Governor's Health Science Academy, Tunisia Baldwin, I hope I said that correctly, at Old Dominion University, Tarshay Frazier, Virginia Commonwealth University, Alexis Walker, Norfolk State University for Nursing, and Arnez Hargraves, ECPI for Community Aided Drafting and Design. And they came over from Newport News to watch the show. They're going to be talking with our producer, Lisa Godley, right after the show about journalism and about what we do here at Another View. So we thank them for joining us today and hope that they definitely enjoyed the show. And audience, we want to thank you for the privilege of your time this hour. It truly is our hope that something you heard today will prompt you to pay close attention to your own mental health. And again, if you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, please contact the National Mental Health Hotline by calling or texting 988. You can also chat online at 988lifeline.org. Now, you can listen to this show again, or you can share it with a friend. You can find us at whro.org/anotherview or wherever you go for your podcast listening pleasure. Next week on Another View, Dr. Keith Newby and Dr. Alvian Lyons on the third part of our series on relationships. This time we talk about issues that impact real connection in our relationships. Let me tell you, this series has been incredible. Our theme music is an original composition created especially for Another View by Jay Sennett. Lisa Godley is our show producer. Todd Washburn is our audio engineer filling in for Jordan Christie. Welcome back, Todd. And Dr. Barry Graham would have answered our phones, but I know you all were listening today. I'm Barbara Hamlee. Thanks so much for listening, and let's get together again next Thursday at noon for Another View.
Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, carrying out your charitable wishes forever. Whether it's helping shelter animals, feeding the homeless, enhancing the arts, or supporting students. Learn more at leaveabequest.org.